Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening. Thanks for being with us again. Whatever day and time it is for you, because lots of people listen at their convenience, but as you know, the show is 9 o'clock on Thursday nights, and we're here tonight with Jim Palmer, who's been on before and really has a fascinating story. He's got his third book just came out, Notes from Over the Edge, and we'll be talking to Jim in just a minute after tonight's metaphysical musing. And I was thinking about something which kind of relates to Jim's experience and his story. And of course, out of nowhere on Facebook, up popped an image to share with people that says religion is belief in someone else's experience and spirituality is having your own. And there are a lot of variations on that statement, but think about the difference between belief and experience. Belief is somebody has had an experience and they tell the story of that experience, and typically the story that they tell about that experience gets repeated by lots of other people, and everyone says, well, I trust the person who had the experience and I trust the people telling the story, so it must be true and I'm going to act like it's true. But the person who believes, in quotation marks, the story hasn't had the experience. They're accepting somebody else's story about it. Spirituality, or perhaps the shamanic experience, might be a better way to express it, is going into that same realm that the person who told that story that the religion started with, and it could be any of the religions. Almost every religion is based on the personal experience of an enlightened master. And it's the story of what they learned that is passed down as the principles of the religion. But the people telling the story are not enlightened. They haven't had the experience, so they tend to misinterpret what was said, and those misinterpretations become part of the story and part of the understanding. So the experience of someone on a spiritual path, somebody who is doing things to quiet their mind and connect to the intelligence of the universe. I'm trying to be as generic as I possibly can, because there are so many different ways to do it and so many different traditions. People who are doing that, as they continue their practices, as they continue what they do, start to have the experiences that the enlightened masters had, because that doesn't happen in an instant. It happens after a progression of experiences and practice and focusing on getting to that point, getting quiet enough to have that deep understanding. And they start having their own experience. And then they can say, I'm having this experience and I'm reading the story that was told in my religion or someone else's religion, and now I'm starting to understand. My experience is starting to touch the same things that the experiences in the stories of this religious tradition, this spiritual tradition, have talked about, and I'm starting to get it. I'm starting to have those moments where I know what that meant. And ultimately, given enough time, enough focus, enough practice, they will have a moment of enlightenment in which they do enter that same state of consciousness that the enlightened masters all over the world throughout history, that all these traditions are based on, have had, because that experience is there to be had. It's something that you can get to, and it's completely changes everything. But it's not how you get there. There are religious and spiritual traditions all over the world, and their practices, while they may be similar, are culturally different. And it doesn't matter which path you take, because if you use the practices consistently and you do all the things that are known to work, then you get to the same place. And it's, you know, which sounds simple, except what happens along the way is you have to heal everything within you that is in pain or is holding on to something which will not accept where you're going, what that experience of oneness and love is. So it's more complicated than just do the same prayer, do the same meditation, do whatever it is. There's emotional work. But this is a conversation that is an ongoing conversation in my life, because people look at the work that I do and go, you know, what are you talking about? How do you do that? And then, not that I'm good at quoting scripture, which Jim certainly is, but I quote a couple of things back to him and said, isn't this what Jesus told us, all of us are supposed to do? I mean, why is what I'm doing wrong? So it's a fascinating conversation that keeps growing and changing. So that's tonight's metaphysical musing, which probably could go on as a rant for the next hour and a half. But we're going to have more fun talking to my guest tonight, Jim Palmer. Are you with us, Jim?
I am, David.
And it's four books, not three books, right? I said that.
Well,
I misspoke.
Yeah, the fourth one just came out in December, and that was Notes from Over the Edge.
Which is a wonderful title. And a feeling that I know all too well.
Yeah, we're all a little bit over the edge, I guess, but I think I fell all the way off.
So for people that have never run across Jim, Jim is very prolific in writing and posting things on Facebook and on his blog, and you can kind of watch how his experiences and his mind works as this stuff flows out, because he writes incredible stuff and attaches images to them. And so it's not just writing books. He's writing all the time. This stuff is just moving through him. So what we always do with guests on the show, and you know because you've been on before, is ask you to tell your story. And your story is such a fascinating and powerful story, so I'm really glad that we get to share it with the audience again.
Well, good. Well, yeah, it's good to be on the show again. I'm down here in Nashville, Tennessee, where it was 60 degrees yesterday, and it's down in the teens today, so kind of strange winter for sure. But I guess I could pick up the story of my own spiritual journey and spiritual evolution when I was in Chicago in divinity school. So there I was in seminary, learning the original languages of the Bible, the Greek, Hebrew, learning systematic theology, and earned my master's of divinity degree, and went on to be a full-time senior pastor in a church, using my divinity degree, my knowledge of theology, as, you know, the resident theologian, scholar, teacher, you know, every Sunday morning, every Sunday night, every Wednesday evening. You know, I was the person that a lot of people really turned to and depended on in terms of, you know, interpreting and teaching the meaning of the scriptures. And I did this for several years. And began to recognize that for all my good theology, my understanding of the biblical languages, you know, as much of a, you know, of an expert that somebody considered me to be in that realm, I still seemed to be lacking true freedom and happiness and joy and well-being in my life. And so, you know, I saw the paradox of that. How can my theology seem so right? And how can my inner reality seem, you know, to not really line up with what that theology seemed to be telling me? So that recognition, that kind of taking stock and answering the hard questions about your own life was really prompted my pouring myself into deconstructing my religious beliefs, sorting through it, trying to understand why this was, why did I believe what I believed, what was the impact it was really having on my life, how much of it was real, how much of it was authentic and true, and how much of it did I just really need to let go because it wasn't producing a good result in my life. And so that was, and that's when I really started writing about my journey, Divine Nobodies, Shedding Religion to Find God and the Unlikely People Who Help You, was the book where I tell the story of how I began to dismantle and deconstruct the Christianity that I had for so many years constructed through seminary and being in professional ministry. And it was ironic that, you know, it was as if, you know, some people that you might not expect necessarily that would be the people to show you the next step, kind of unsuspecting people that you cross along the everyday paths of life, and they end up having a profound impact on your understanding of God. And Divine Nobodies, each chapter of that book kind of tells the story of those people that came across my path that really challenged what I thought was true, challenged what I thought about God, challenged my beliefs about having inner peace and freedom, my view of the world, my view of other people. And so I went through a period where, you know, I left professional Christian ministry. I gradually, you know, stepped away from organized Christianity to try to sort through this on my own. And so after going through a lot of deconstruction of my theology and my Christianity, I realized that I couldn't get stuck there. You know, I started getting a lot of emails from people who were frustrated with their religious background and they'd become anti-church and anti-religion, but they were getting stuck. And so I recognized that there has to be an alternative. You know, it's so easy to point the finger and come up with what's wrong with anything, the world, church, religion. But it's another thing to step out and explore and decide what is right for you. What are you for? What is it going to be moving forward?
Mm-hmm.
And so I launched into exploring what it might mean to have meaningful relationship with God, with the divine, outside of the mentalities of religion, outside of, you know, the boundaries and the mindsets and the views that I picked up along the way in institutional church and pop Christianity. And so that book is really a description of what it began to look like in my own life. You know, like what was church now? How did prayer fit in to my life? What did it mean to really be a spiritually mature person? What about the question of evil? You know, all these kind of questions I wrestle with and began to explore the alternatives. And I did, you know, deconstruct or shed a lot of my Christianity, but at the same time, the person, Jesus, never really left, they remained significant. And so I was kind of left with a little bit of a challenge here. Okay, I got into Christianity and that's how I learned Jesus. Now I'm giving up a lot of my Christianity and yet I still see Jesus as significant. So what does it really mean for Jesus to be part of my spirituality outside of the confines of Christianity? And Being Jesus in Nashville, which was the third book, was my taking a year of my life to delve into the question of why is Jesus significant? What does Jesus really matter for my life? What is the message, the teachings, the relevance of Jesus once you lay down a lot of your former Christian beliefs? And, you know, the last couple of years, I've become much more focused and earnest in wanting to address the issue of my own personal suffering. You know, I see that it's there. I see that there are ways that I approached God through religion to find peace and fulfillment, which didn't happen. And so Notes from the Over the Edge really started as a Black Spiral notebook, and I started scribbling notes about my resolve to get to the bottom to answer the question of personal suffering in my life. And was there an answer? Could it be resolved? And what would that even mean? What would that look like in my life? And Notes from the Over the Edge is my journey into addressing the root cause of my own personal suffering. And, you know, along the way, especially of being Jesus in Nashville, you know, over the course of writing that book, there were a lot of things that happened in my life. I had two near-death experiences. Both my mother and father passed away. And so there was a lot of volatility to life for me. And so I was wrestling with all these theological and questions in the context of a lot of personal pain and suffering. And so that's what really motivated me to focus on that in my life and what led to Notes from Over the Edge.
That's a whole lot of transition by itself, having your parents die and near-death experiences. I mean, we've had a couple of people on the show who had major transformations after near-death experiences. So it's not surprising in the middle of all that that you would have major shifts in your life.
Well, I think when difficulty, hardship, you know, pain comes into a person's life, you know, it has a way of, you know, forcing you into a set of questions that maybe you otherwise don't ask when things are, you know, kind of skimming along and going well. And so, you know, I think that ultimately, if a person is really insistent upon truly being happy, then I think ultimately they'll find the truth, because through a process of elimination, as they become attached to this or that as a source of their happiness and well-being, and find that it didn't work, that it fell short, then I think they keep on they keep on pressing forward until they ultimately find a source of joy and fulfillment that's lasting and doesn't crumble depending on your circumstances. And I was very much a person, you know, I came through the avenue of religion, where you kind of learn, you know, if you're good, if you're obedient, if you believe the right things, if you do the right things, then God will bless you. And generally we define God blessing you as somehow working out your circumstances in your favor. And so it was very much a focus on bargaining with God, in a sense, based on the belief that God could affect or change your circumstances. And then all that being based on the idea that ultimately happiness is contingent upon, you know, the circumstances of your life. And so it took a lot of pain and suffering, a lot of that, of those things that occurred, you know, to force me through seeing that was not ultimately the way for me to be happy.
It, you know, not having been raised in Christianity, sometimes I hear the way that you put certain things and go, oh, really? I didn't even ever think of it that way. So the idea of bargaining with God for your life to be better, and just putting it that way is really fascinating to me, because that means anytime something doesn't go the way you would like it to go, you feel not only like personal failure, but you feel like you've in some way in your relationship with God done it wrong, and you're not being blessed.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the case. I mean, I you know, the first memory that came to my mind was being in a hospital with a mom who was giving birth to a baby who had a rare chromosome disorder, and she was told that the baby would not survive, but she was insisted on going through the pregnancy and believing that God would do a miracle. And when the baby was born, you know, indeed the baby did have the chromosome disorder, and the baby did die a few hours after that. And she blamed herself for not having had enough faith, for not being obedient enough, that, you know, there apparently must be something wrong with her life, that God would not do this for her. And, you know, that's some of the twisted I think, you know, misguided, erroneous thinking that if you're not careful, you pick up along the way, you know. But, you know, it's fundamentally, I think it's driven by the idea that we have, which is that, you know, that the happiness is dependent on circumstances. You know, I had this discussion with someone yesterday. You know, what about all the people who are very loving, compassionate, very faithful to their religious tradition, and yet they experience hardship, difficulty, and tragedy and loss in their lives? I mean, what do we say to these people? That they must be failing, right? That God is not blessing them, that they should be doing more, you know? And so that's one aspect of, you know, some Christian ways of thinking about God that I think is a real trap for people and sets people up for a lot of, you know, difficulty in their lives and their relationship with God. You know, I think it is true in general that if a person responds to situations as they require, if a person is an expression of love and compassion and goodness, that you might expect that person's path, you know, will go better for them, as opposed to a person who's maybe bitter, resentful, angry, selfish. You know, so I think it is true that the way we live matters, you know, and does impact our experience of life and the kind and quality of life we're living. But that's still a big leap to the idea that, you know, God is looking down, measuring our performance, and on the basis of that is either going to reward us with a good circumstance or is going to withhold his blessing, which means we continue to suffer or have hardship in our lives.
Right. And it's a matter of defining what the blessing is and what the purpose is. You know, for the woman you just described, her definition was that a miracle would make the child live, and that was the only purpose to continuing the pregnancy, and the failure or the lack of blessing was that the child died. And, you know, from my perspective, I could see wanting to go through with the pregnancy to meet your kid, whether it lived or not. To have that moment and say, hi, I love you. Thanks for being here. I'm sorry you can't stay. Which is just a completely different way of looking at it and has no failure in it.
Right. And I think that would have been a beautiful motivation, you know, and would have, I mean, it still would have been difficult, obviously, but it would have been absent all that other mental anguish that she was carrying because of the religious ideas that she had, you know, we know that we go through life and, you know, life is not something that happens to us. You know, there's life, and then we run it through our mental models, paradigms, scripts, stories, you know, and then that influences the way we actually experience life. And unfortunately, a lot of people have in their model, story, script, and paradigm a lot of things about themselves and God and others and the world and life that is practically sabotaging their happiness and joy and peace at every turn. So, you know, I think this is why, you know, thinking about when I was in seminary that, you know, the scholar is always looking to add knowledge, but it may be that the wise person is the person who can unlearn something every day, unlearn that aspect of their prior, you know, beliefs about themselves, God, others, and world, or life that's really preventing them from experiencing the true joy and freedom and peace in life.
Right. Right. Well, I'm curious about your experience in seminary and what studying scripture. I can see studying scripture from a lot of different perspectives. So in the Jewish tradition, there's thousands of years of commentary written down, the Talmud and the Gemara and other things. And it's basically Rabbi so-and-so of blessed memory said such-and-such, but then Rabbi so-and-so said this and Rabbi so-and-so said this. But now we're thinking it's this way.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's conversations that have gone on literally for 6,000 years and continue about some small piece of scripture and some ancient rabbinical commentary on it. And, you know, on the one hand, that's fascinating. But on the other hand, you know, how many angels are on the head of the pin is a really paltry question compared to the stuff that got played out that way.
Yeah. And
I can also see studying scripture as being, well, our understanding of it is this, and learning what's been said before about a scripture, or it could be your personal contemplation of the scripture and trying to figure out what it is for yourself. So,
yeah, I think that one of the problems with the study of the Bible is the common assumption is that the Bible was written so that we could develop an orthodoxy or a theology about God from it. And I don't think that's true. I think the Bible is fundamentally a story of humankind's relationship to the divine. Sometimes that story is beautiful. Sometimes that story is tragic. Sometimes in that story, we hear God tell us to do things, and all we're doing is rationalizing our own, you know, nationalistic agenda or our own, you know, selfish motives, you know, and that is part of the story. So I think that the Bible is that story, and we can find ourselves in it almost every turn. But I think the problem is once you think that the Bible was really meant to be sort of a theological book, you know, to dot your I's and cross your T's in terms of getting down all the correct theology about God, then I think that's where it can go astray.
Yeah, it's and often does.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, in so many different ways that people can overlay the story that they want to be true onto carefully chosen pieces of scripture from any religion. You know, not just Christianity.
Right, and we know that there's people, I mean, even today, right? I mean, we know that there's people, you know, who feel like God told them to do, you know, like pretty ridiculous things, you know, including right. harming other people. And so it's not anything new. It is part of the story of how we project onto God, or we somehow find a rationalization in God for the things that we want to do in life, you know,
right.
But at the same time, you know, like religion and the sacred scriptures, the Bible or whatever scriptures you're talking about, can be profound inspirations for love, compassion, you know, in the world. So, you know, it's kind of a double-edged sword.
Yep, absolutely. My guest tonight is Jim Palmer, former pastor and prolific author. His new book is Notes from Over the Edge. I love the title of the book. What's the best way for people to find you online?
Well, my blog is jimpalmerblog.com. And so I do a lot of blogging there. You know, I'm also on Facebook with Jim Palmer. I got a couple pages on Facebook. I'm on, you know, Twitter and Tumblr. But jimpalmerblog.com would be a good place where you could at least start. You could probably find my Facebook page off of all that.
Great. Great. And I urge people to check it out because Jim is just fascinating. He writes some fascinating stuff. So we will be back after a few messages here on the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere on Empower Radio. Don't go nowhere.
Have you ever lost a cat? And have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it? Hi there, I'm Andrew Hoffman. I went on this website called InventNow.org. Then I decided to make an invention of my own. It's called the Lost Cat Magnet Invention. So you can get your cat back after you lost it. Just turn it on, and lost cats stick to it. That's a good cat. If your cat was hiding up in a tree, it won't be up a tree anymore. It will be stuck to the lost cat magnet. And sometimes they fly toward you in the air. Just listen to one satisfied cat. See? That's proof. You should go to the InventNow.org website too. But just remember one thing. Don't do a lost cat magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at InventNow.org. brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
I'm home, and I love it. I'm home where I belong. I'm home, and I love it. I'm home where I belong.
It's always nice to come home, but these days, many Americans are at risk of foreclosure and losing their homes. Fortunately, help is available. Making Home Affordable is a free program from the U.S. government that has already helped over 1 million struggling homeowners, and we want to help you.
I'm home.
I'm home.
And I love it. I'm home.
I'm home.
Find out now what your options are. Go to makinghomeaffordable.gov or call 1-888-995-HOPE. The sooner you act, the better chance we can help you.
I'm home.
I'm home.
Where I be.
Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Sassy! Sassy!
This week's episode, Danger at the Old Well.
Last one to the old well's a rotten egg.
Ha-ha, I win.
Whoa! Ah! Sassy! Johnny fell down the well.
I'm wet!
What, Sassy? You know where Mr. Gunderson keeps his rope? Go get it, girl! What? You'd rather use this time to set people straight about shelter pet adoption?
I'm cold!
People shouldn't be afraid to adopt from a shelter? Because shelter pets are screened for sound health and temperament?
I'm wet and cold!
Sassy, what about Johnny? What? Let Johnny sit in the well until he learns to be more self-reliant? Sassy!
What'd he say?
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt!
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
And we're back with my guest Jim Palmer, who just wrote another book, Notes from Over the Edge, and just has a very personal and fascinating take on religion in general, but Christianity in particular. Jim, why don't you share with us, Notes from Over the Edge is basically your notes of your personal experience for a part of what you've gone through. And, you know, I talk about walkabout a lot on the show, the idea of metaphorically or actually going out into the wilderness with only what you're carrying and saying goodbye to everything that you left behind to learn something or have an experience or whatever it is, but to stay out there until you find what you're looking for and then you come back different. Often done as an initiation or a rite of passage. And, you know, here you are, like so many of us, doing something which is obviously walkabout in the modern world or postmodern world, some people would say, and not going out into the wilderness externally, but doing it in everyday life and your own personal wilderness of things that you need to examine. And what I love about your books and your posts on Facebook and your blog is that you're sharing the nuggets that come to you in the process, the thoughts that come through, the understandings that come through. So first of all, I honor your journey because I read this stuff and I go, oh my goodness, look where he is now. And I know it's a challenge no matter what it looks like. You know, I went through one and it looked very different from this. And I don't think it ever ends, actually, once you start going out and doing that. But why don't you share some of what you have in the book and some of those understandings and experiences?
Well, the Notes from Over the Edge is really separated into some different parts. And the first part of the book, you know, is my kind of sharing and discussion about what does it even mean to know the truth exactly? You know, because you know, coming through my religious background, going through seminary, you know, you begin to think that truth is something like a proposition that you put your belief in. It's an idea. You know, we think of truth as something that you conceptualize, you know, like a piece of information that you hold in your mind, a correct or right view about something, about God, about life. And so I really realized that the part of my particular problem was, is I was coming at truth in a way that it wasn't particularly useful, but by thinking of it this way. And so the first section of the book is a discussion about what does it even take for a person really to know the truth, and what does that even mean? You know, I talk a little bit in that section about what I think it involves is first a person who's got an earnest desire and a diamond-like resolve to know the truth. Or to know truth, you know, to get to the core of their truth. You know, I think that it requires a great measure of courage, because often the road to truth is a road of nonconformity. It's a road that sometimes you will travel on your own. It's a road that won't necessarily be lined with people cheering you on, because it might be a path that takes issue with or challenges or moves you away from your particular belief system or your religious tradition. So I had to really confront this inside myself a bit, that the truth is not so much an intellectual pursuit. It's not having correct theology. That instead, it's really understanding the way things are. And I had to realize that when I looked out into the world, what I saw wasn't really what it was. You know, I wasn't really seeing things as they really were. I was only seeing things as they appeared, separate, divided. You know, there appears to be a scarcity to all the things that we really want in life. We have to fight for it. It appears like it's somehow caught up in life circumstances. And so much of how I understood life, you know, the way I was seeing it wasn't accurate. It was really ignorance. And so the first section, discusses that, what is really involved in if you really want to know the truth and pursue it. You know, I mean, and so maybe it's not for everybody. I mean, it can be a real, it's a challenge. I mean, like I said, it requires a sort of fearless courage to pursue truth. So the first section really is about that. And the second section of the book gets into a lot of the particulars of what I was seeing was preventing me from experiencing greater peace and addressing the root causes of my suffering. And a lot of it was my view that of separation. You know, you kind of learn this through religion. We're separated from God. We're separated from each other. We're separated from peace and love and freedom and life. And so we have to really struggle to get to it. We have to attain something, earn something, fight for something in order to be connected with the things that matter the most and the things we want most deeply. And it has really been a lot of my journey to realize that those things aren't true, that there really isn't nothing to, there's nothing to attain. There's nothing to earn. There's not any place to get, that the way things really are is that I'm already one with the divine, one with peace and freedom and life. You know, that in essence, that this is really the core of who I am. It's not even something that I have, like an object that you hold in your hand, but it's actually, who I am, my original self, born out of the image and likeness and being of God. I am peace. I am freedom. I am joy. I am connectedness. I am, you know, related and connected to all things. And I was given a human mind and body to carry this into the human journey and to discover this and to express it and to live this out in the context of the human journey. You know, I think this was the obvious message of Jesus. Jesus claimed to be God and man. I think this was the message of Jesus, that God and humankind are not separated. Our humanity is an obstacle to our divinity, and our divinity is not compromised by our humanity. And when we're getting it right, it functions as one unified whole. And in the last section three, I go into a lot of detail of how I think a lot of so-called Orthodox Christian theology is presenting is kind of, you know, it's promoting, I think, some of this misunderstanding about what Jesus was about, and our relationship to God, and where a lot of the ways that the Christianity can trip people up. And then in the section after that, I go through some detail about what I went through in my own religious detox and how that looks often for people's lives and what I learned, the mistakes I made. And in the very last section, I talk about I apply the themes and principles of the book to two cases. One is dealing with mental disorders like depression, or, you know, people who are bipolar, and then a section that applies the message of the book to a case like domestic violence, because it's one of those things where the truth, if it doesn't work in situations like that, then I don't know if we can count on it to work anywhere. You know, either it's true in those hardest case examples, or it's not true at all. So, I have Tourette's myself. And, you know, I've struggled with depression. My mother was an alcoholic and she suffered from mental illness. And I'm, you know, married to someone who was previously a part of a very destructive and severe domestic violence relationship. And so those are a couple issues that I have a lot of kind of personal connection to. And so I decided to devote a couple chapters to those.
I haven't finished the book, so I'm looking forward to reading your take on that. And this is all incredibly important stuff. The thing that fascinates me about where you're going with all of this is you're asking the same questions and I think coming to similar places with it that all the Eastern religions have talked about. You know, what is truth? What is peace? What is the source of suffering? How can you live without suffering? How can you be in touch with truth? And it always occurred to me that that stuff is there in the teachings of Jesus, perhaps not in all the other commentary written by other people. You know, the books have a lot of stuff that wasn't said by Jesus. But in, you know, and I'm no scriptural scholar in Christian scripture. It seems to me that Jesus said the same thing that all the great masters said. And so he had to be saying the same things that Buddha said. He had to be saying the same things that are the principles in all the great religious traditions throughout history. And that's about how do you live without suffering? How do you achieve peace? What is truth?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think, I ultimately got to the point of recognizing that the significance of Jesus is inclusive, it's universal for all of humankind. So, you know, Jesus' message, his teaching, his life, why he is relevant, is universally significant, it, regardless of even your religious tradition. I mean, Jesus himself came through a religious tradition, which was Judaism, and there were points at which he celebrated it, and there were points when he was critical of it. And so we all have a religious tradition, and many people have a religious tradition, and I don't think, you know, Jesus really is, I think there's a difference between the teachings and life of Jesus and Christianity as a religion. You know, I think that there's always differences. I mean, I think the fundamental question that Jesus was really addressing is a little different from the Buddha, but they both have, you know, you find some of the Buddha's, the truth that Buddha was witness to, you see Jesus expressing, and you see the truth that Jesus was witness to, you see Buddha expressing.
Yeah.
You know, I think Jesus, I think his contribution and what he, his life, I think, at least for me, the contribution had to do with addressing the issue of separation from God, separation from the divine, you know, and because he came out of the context of a religious tradition where it was all about separation. And I think the Buddha seemed, you know, as it turns out, it seems like that you might say that he was fundamentally addressing the nature of reality, the issue of human suffering, suffering particularly. And but you're right, I don't think their teachings are inconsistent with each other.
Right. Which the more I read of different traditions, you know, whether it's Hindu tradition or Taoist thought or Buddhism and Christianity, the more the fundamental teachings, at least as they were expressed by the original teachers, are all the same. The underlying reality is the same, so their understanding is only culturally different, but they can't be talking about something else. There's only one whatever it is.
Right. And that's such a useful observation, you know, like you saying that the major difference is, is cultural. I think for me, it seems to become... You know, I mean, just for me personally, it seems to be less complicated and becoming a bit more simple, you know, in terms of what's involved in, you know, living a life of happiness and peace, you know, that it's not necessarily this kind of slugging it out in this endless, you know, theological discourse to come out with the right answers about the divine. It might instead be just simply expressing what we all know to be true from every religious tradition, things like the expression of love and compassion along the everyday paths of life, and that these actions and these expressions themselves are very useful in terms of knowing and unpacking truth and our own peace and joy and freedom.
Yes. One of the things I just wanted to grab the edge of before we run out of time is use the term religious detox, which I thought was in so many ways perfect.
Well, right now I'm like 7 days into a juicing fast, and you know, it so physically we know that the body stores up a lot of poisons, a lot of things that affect our health. And that's the whole point of doing like a physical detox, is you clean that out of your system. And when you clean that out, it's amazing how it improves your overall physical health in a lot of different ways. I mean, people have incredible stories of how, kind of doing a physical detox really helped their health, transform their physical health. Well, it's the same thing with religious detox. I mean, we have all these mentalities and views and understandings and beliefs that are like stuck up there inside of us, and they're making us sick. They're literally, a poison. I mean, these are things like I'm inherently bad, that I'm separated and have to earn and perform my way into being close to the divine. There's so many beliefs that we carry inside ourselves, and it doesn't matter how much other stuff you add until you clean out, you unlearn, you shed, you let go of all that you've absorbed into your, story and your model of God and the world and your thinking about that, then it's going to be very difficult. And so, just like in juicing, you kind of go off, food and you juice because it's easier to digest. And in the same way with religious detox, I think you strip down to the very basic fundamentals. You know, for me, it was walking away from the Bible, walking away from my church involvement, walking away from a lot of my religious practices, and just for a season of time, you know, really, really simplifying and asking very basic questions and confronting, you know, those ideas that I held for so long that I never questioned. And it's messy, you know, going through religious detox because it's,
oh, yeah.
You know, it can be a messy process. You know, there's some volatility to it because we shift, we change, our relationships change, our beliefs change, our securities change, the thing that we perhaps attach ourselves to for our security that changes. And so it's, you know, but if you hold on and you press through it, you know, then you find that on the other side of that, that, you know, there's a lot of new possibilities for going forward.
Do you have people that you're working with these principles and that are essentially going through the same process with your guidance at this point?
Yeah, I have a spiritual direction practice that works, you know, like a good bit of the spiritual practice that I do are with people who come out of a religious background and wanting to let go or put that behind them or to deconstruct it so that they can move on with a more fulfilling relationship with God and the divine, because it does get stuck in there. And sometimes it's kind of difficult to work through it. So a lot of my spiritual practice is working with people in that kind of scenario.
Mm-hmm. People who had, like you, been pastors or in other ways involved in religion as leaders, or people who are lay people that have just hit the same kind of struggles in their life?
Yeah, both. I'd say it's more lay people, just, you mm-hmm. know, people who grew up in a Christian background, went to church for years, and then started realizing that things really weren't adding up for them, you know, and then started into that, you know, because it's very common what people go through. You know, the process is pretty similar. You know, there's a set of things that most people kind of go through with regard to that. That's why I kind of devoted one section of the book in Notes from Over the Edge specifically talking about, you know, some of what happens in that detox process. But
sure,
it's good to do it with someone, you know, not to do it on your own, you know, like to have someone who's gone through it, who can kind of guide you and be there to listen, encourage you through the process. And that's a lot of what I do in my spiritual direction.
Excellent. Well, we're running out of time once again. It's always great fun talking to you, and there's always so much for us to kick around, and you're always doing fascinating things. So what's the thought you want to leave people with?
I think a thought that I would maybe leave with people would be to, you know, to have trust in your own internal guidance system, you know, I think people know the truth in the deepest parts of who they are. You know, I think it's more a case where sometimes we lack a little confidence in terms of following and listening to what we already know. And so I just encourage people to see that this really isn't a guru-driven process, that the voice of truth is inside of you. It's knit into the very core of who you are, and it's okay to listen to yourself. You know, if somebody's interested in some kind of, you know, someone wants a dialogue about this, and someone is interested in spiritual direction, you know, you can hunt me down on my blog, jimpalmerblog.com. You can email me at nobody.jimpalmer@gmail.com. You know, you can, I'm pretty active in social media. I don't think it'd be that difficult to track.
Yeah, you're not. You're not hard to find.
Yeah, and you can shoot me an email, and we could start a conversation about that.
Fantastic, Jim. Thanks for so much for being on the show again and telling us about the new book, Notes from Over the Edge: Unmasking the Truth to End Your Suffering. I encourage people to find him on Facebook and on his blog. And Jim's a fascinating guy. You never can tell what he's going to be into. Thanks so much for spending some time with us.
Thanks, David. I appreciate you having me on. I really appreciate just you know your the own contribution that you and the show has in really opening people's minds to a more expansive spirituality and just all the topics that you raise and all the things that you explore and delve into. You know, I wish more people created a space for others to have this kind of conversation. So I really appreciate you.
Thanks so much. And if by chance some of you are interested in what in the world David does, you can go to househealing.com. And on the contact tab is every conceivable way to contact me, including my online scheduling calendar. I do a 20-minute free assessment of what's going on with a person, place, situation, whatever it happens to be, and we can see whether I can be helpful to you. If you want to listen to the show archive, you can find it at, cleverly enough, thefarkasfiles.com. And all the shows are there, and you can listen to them 24/7 anytime that works for you. So thank you so much for listening. It's an honor to be part of your life, and I have so much fun doing this. So we'll be back next week. This is David Franklin Farkas for the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere on Empower Radio. Have a fantastic week.